Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The family from TBS's comedy sensation The Detour is on the road again. Their destination, if they don't run off course, right here, New York City. The misadventures resume Tuesday night, and star, co-creator, executive producer Jason Jones joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. How's the shape of technology impacting television, from smart sets to virtual reality? Next half hour, we'll direct that question to former Walt Disney executive Charlie Nudi, now chief executive of Mobi TV. Humans is back for season 2 on AMC. One of 2015's best new series invades Monday nights with a new round of alternative Earth tales probing our contact with synthetic beings. Contact more real than you think in this era of Siri and Alexa. Stay tuned next hour for Humans creators and executive producers Jonathan Blackley and Sam Vincent live from England. Also ahead, TV1's first scripted drama, Picnic at Hanging Rock, the miniseries, and our classic trivia question this week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A great Friday afternoon to you and all. Welcome once again to the program All About Television. 90-minute edition for you. A live break guest coming your way on this side and the other side of the pond. And as always, we invite you to be part of the program. 41 degrees top of the hour here in the Big Apple. Here's how you get involved. You raise your voice, dial the call, make this number happen. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is up for business as well. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use that if you like. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. The Detour's Jason Jones joins us live here in the Big Apple after these news notes. On a January 30th episode, TV1 Senior Vice President D'Angelo Proctor suggested the network was close to greenlighting its first scripted drama series. This afternoon, it's a done deal, and we've got the details. Media, the original movie about a family-owned enterprise in that field that premieres next Saturday night on TV1, will be turned into a weekly series. It's not known yet if the cast, led by Penny Johnson-Gerald and Brian White, or the production team, led by executive producer Kathy Hughes, who is also the co-founder and chairperson of TV1 Parent Radio 1, and her colleague Susan Banks, will stay on for the series. TV1 expects to launch Media as a weekly series this summer or fall. We hope to have the people from Media on this program next week. Picnic at Hanging Rock, one of Australia's most popular novels, which became a hit movie directed by Peter Weir worldwide in 1975, will get the miniseries treatment this year. Production of 6 episodes begin before the end of the month, with the cast led by Game of Thrones actress Natalie Dormer. Picnic deals with 3 girls and a school teacher who vanished on Valentine's Day, 1900. Fremantle Media will oversee this miniseries from Victoria, Australia, and then distribute it worldwide. Breaking news note, TNT will offer season 2 of Animal Kingdom starting May 30th. And one of Breakfast Television's all-time villains, George the Animal Steel, has passed away. No word on the cause of death yet. He was 79. And that is news notes for today. And now, if he is still on the road with us, joining us live here in New York, the star, co-creator, executive producer, writer, director, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of The Detour, marking his 2nd season debut next Tuesday night at TBS. It's a pleasure to welcome this program, Jason Jones. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
Very, very fine, thank you. Why did you decide to take everything under your control, including the kitchen sink, doing this program?
I'm a masochist, really, I guess. I like to punish myself. I don't trust anyone. I'm a Howard Hughes type. I like to live indoors with, you know, Kleenex boxes on my feet for the most part. So that's basically why I have to do everything.
Well, you do trust your partner in work and life, Samantha Bee. You also know from Full Frontal on TBS because she also did this series with you.
She did, yes. We created the series together. And then I helped her launch her show. And now we have two TV shows, 3 kids, and we don't see each other.
Except on business,
yes. Business comes first, always, right? Business, much more important than a relationship.
Well, let's think about the business with season two, because it kicks off Tuesday night, and I understand that why you are here in the Big Apple is because a lot of the action this year takes place in New York because of what your on-screen family does.
Yes. Yeah, so the last season we left with a. Did you see the last season? Did you see the end of last season?
Yeah.
There was a big cliffhanger that I was being interrogated the entire season, and people assumed it was because I was an idiot and a screw up, but it turns out it was actually not me. It was my wife. And this season is about unpacking her past, which is where she lived, which was in New York City. I get offered a job, and she doesn't want to move back there because she's returning to her criminal. Her criminal past, and she's very nervous about it, and it comes back to haunt her in the most awful of ways.
And so, is a lot of the second season in New York City? Did you do a lot of filming all over the boroughs?
Yeah, we did. We did. We were everywhere. The family live in Manhattan. They live in Harlem. But then we were everywhere. We were shooting in Greenpoint a lot. Shot at the Bronx. We even shot in Staten Island. We've spread it around.
Yeah, a lot of people may be very surprised to know that Staten Island, which some call the forgotten borough around this neck of the woods, that it's become a major film and TV production center. Let's give credit to Julie Mann and folks at the Mayor's Office of Entertainment, because they've really been out there trying to get the outer boroughs, that's everybody beyond Manhattan, to be involved in the TV world.
It really takes a lot. I had actually, to tell you the truth, had made so many jokes, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are guilty of this. You take the ferry over, and that's the amount of time you spend on there. But having spent like a little bit of time over there, I went. It gets a bad rap. It's kind of nice. There's some really nice areas of it. We shot at a yacht club there. It was, there's yachts in Staten Island. It was lovely. So my apologies to the. My apologies to the people of Staten Island, who I made jokes of about for years.
Okay, apology accepted, I'm sure. By the way, just in case people don't know, this week, the mayor's office announced that they're going to be building, over the next couple of years, a 100,000-square-foot TV and film production center in Brooklyn, not far from where we are doing this program in Industry City, Sunset Park, which is going to be open in 2020, maybe earlier. But it's really great to see that the outer boroughs are really getting their due in terms of the kind of TV work they're doing. And I know there's a lot of work here in Brooklyn. There's a lot of work now in the Bronx, some in Queens. It's nice to see things spread out and not just one borough's deal.
Well, to tell you the truth, what's great about it is it actually can, it's Hollywood and the crap that we do is all about cheating. And you can cheat so many locations out in the outer boroughs as well. Like it's not just an immediate stand-in for New York. It can double for a lot of different places.
So what do you want to do in season two? How do you want to expand this core idea of, I like to call your series Dysfunctional Route 66. Because you had this family that was like taking all these detours and getting themselves into like the craziest of situations.
Nobody likes to shake it up too much, because you come to love the first season if you did, and then season two you want to give people the same sort of feeling they had the first season, but change it enough. Obviously, we changed the location. We flipped the script in terms of me being the idiot. Now it's squarely on my wife this season. So it's familiar but very different at the same time.
How is your wife now, Lise?
Say again?
How is your on-screen wife now, Lise? How have you sort of developed the chemistry from this from the first season to now?
It's the more time you spend together, the more you kind of like each other, thankfully. I guess it's not always. But, yeah, she's grown into like a really great friend. And when I always get excited when I see her, because she's just a great person to hang out with. And based on that relationship, you get to, when I'm writing for her, I know her voice and, what she – what she will say almost always in a scenario, and the only time she rejects what I've written is when I haven't written it, and it's usually a network note. She went, the network wrote this, didn't they? I think so, yeah. And then she's like, I'm not saying that. I won't say that.
Jason Jones is the star, creator, co-creator, I should say, co-executive producer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of The Detour. Season 2 of that popular TBS series begins this coming Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And Jason's with us live from here in the Big Apple this Friday afternoon right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Fine Apple Band, also with you live from New York. Glad you are joining us right here this half hour and beyond here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a question or comment for Jason? Give us a call. Use this number, 646-652-2906. And use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 Benigas 1089 has just come into the room. We won't be with you as we normally would on Monday because of President's Day. We want to wish you and the President a very happy weekend. But we are back on Tuesday with a special episode for you, and it really is special. Earlier today, Netflix premiered the latest season of Chef's Table, its acclaimed food series. And on Tuesday, my lead guest will be the show's creator and executive producer, the one and only David Gelb will join us. And then coming up next week on CMT, a new miniseries premieres. It was called Million Dollar Quartet. It's now called Sun Records. It's directed by Roland Joffe of The Killing Season and The Mission fame. And we've got the executive producer and the head of Think Factory Media, the company that makes this new series, coming to CMT, Leslie Grease. That's all coming up Tuesday, a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And when we come today on the program, among my guests, we have the executive producer and writer of the new NBC series based on the hit movie Taken, Alexandra Carey. That's coming up next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jason, how do you plot each episode of The Detour? When do you use your writer hat, your acting hat, your directing hat? How do you sort of manage from episode to episode?
You know, I mean, we're in the writer's room. You know, it's all about the creating. It's all about the stories, and we're breaking. I got a couple guys that I work with who are just phenomenal. I brought with me from The Daily Show and an old writing friend of mine from Canada. And, you know, it's really all about just what is the most interesting story we can tell. And then you go into production phase, and I have to sort of take a step back a little bit. And, you know, I hire directors for the most part. I direct a couple episodes, but for the most part, main director is a guy named Brent Schroff, who's also an EP on the show. I kind of go, all right, let's go. Let's do this. You know, I need to sit down between takes, so you deal with all that stuff. You know what I mean? Where are you putting the lights and cameras? And obviously, you know, I have input on it, but I try to step away then and just be an actor and think about where the character is and what he's doing. But I always slip out of it, you know. I'll slip out of it, like, in the middle of a scene when I see Natalie's hair out of place and just move it. You know, I'll slip out of it when the kids aren't delivering a line, and I'll sometimes annoyingly give them a line read. But, yeah, it's a struggle. And then when we go to the editing phase, I then come back to basically the same place I started with, is what's the best story, what's the most effective way to tell this story. And you're piecing together this puzzle as you put it all together.
Do you always keep an eye out for, like, how often or what you flip about so that you don't repeat yourself every time you flip?
You know, I mean, so I'm sorry. So can you just repeat that question one more time?
Yeah, because you're talking about flipping out sometimes in the middle of the scene or in the middle of the writer's room or in the middle of getting an episode done. How do you deal with the whole situation of flipping? Do you keep track of, let's say, how often you flip per episode, or do you, like, make notes about, okay, I flipped over this, so next time this happens, I'll know better and I'll do X?
Oh, I don't flip out. I'll stop in the middle of the scene and just correct it. You're talking flipping out, you mean like yelling, right? Or
no, just like stopping things and like whatever you have to do to get things back on track.
You know, I mean, like, it's one of those, we work with such a cast, I'll only do it to the core cast, like, you know, me or the kids, where I can stop a scene and sort of recalibrate as we go, because they're so good at just, like, jumping right back in to the scene, and they kind of go with me, and I know that's what I do occasionally, but for the most part, I stay in it with them, and, you know, I silently judge them inside.
When you get to work on this new season, did you have everything, like all the plots worked out before you started shooting the first episode, or are you one of those people that says, okay, let's get a few episodes under our belt, and then with the writers and everyone else, we'll figure out, like, where we want to go for the rest of the season?
No, I like to plot everything before I start, because I want to work toward, and we block shoot as well, so, and cross board, so I always like to have the spine there, you know. And I'm not saying it doesn't change. It has changed. You know, we had an episode completely blow up on us, and that's always the most fun as a writer when your back is in the corner to write yourself out. It's my favorite place to be. But yeah, as far as starting the season, I don't like not knowing the ending going into it. I like to see it all.
Want to welcome guest 1092 into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Thanks for joining us. If you have a question or a comment for Jason, get in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. You've got some very interesting guest stars popping up on the second batch of episodes, in addition to your partner in work and life, Samantha. You've got a wonderful actor, James Cromwell. You got Last Week Tonight, John Oliver. He just got back to me his thing earlier this month on HBO. The wonderful Broadway star and sometimes TV star, Laura Bonatti, who was a last-time regular on another New York produced show, Mysteries of Law on NBC. And you got Max Casella, who a lot of us still remember as that partner of Doogie Howser, M.D., Neil Patrick Harris, that person, How I Met Your Mother, and so forth. What's it like when you deal with different guest stars on particular episodes? Is there a certain rhythm that you encourage the guest star to do? How do you sort of play with, let's say, you know, a James Cromwell versus a John Oliver?
You know, it's funny. I've heard horror stories of, like, people coming on sets and, like, not, especially when you were on where everyone is used to the rhythm. You know, the pace of the show is very fast, not only the way we talk and the speed of the delivery of the lines, because I overwrite scripts, I think, for the most part. So, you know, instead of trimming, I like to just talk fast. So it's amazing to watch people come in cold, and we just kind of, I don't know if we lucked out or just we just hired well. But, you know, Cromwell, Bonatti, and, like, Max Casella, they just came in and just complete, and Oliver, like, just completely nailed it. They were absolute professionals. We're so much better prepared than I was. And, they just rolled with it. I was amazed. Cromwell specifically, because he's just been, you know, just puts on a master class every time he's acting. And I always ask him, I go, Are you good with that? Are you good with that? And he's like, yeah. Are you good? And I went, yeah, I was good on take one. Like, this is take three, which we don't do too many more than that. Only one time did he ask for another from me. He's like, I can do that better. Give me one more. I was like, anytime you want to do more, I am happy to be in that scene doing it again with you.
And what about John, of course, like you had the experience with The Daily Show, as well as with some of your writers. And now, of course, he's got his own big thing with Last Week Tonight, which is a tremendous show. Mm-hmm. And I hope, by the way, this year has a shot at Peabody Award. We will know more about the Peabody's next month. But what's it like working with him? And then sort of leading into something else, too, because you mentioned you brought in writers from The Daily Show. What was it like for them to go from a certain style of writing, namely sketch comedy, on a four-night-a-week basis, to doing an episode a week where you have to basically deal with plot, and the plot has to work not for like 5, 6, 7 minutes, but for the whole 22, 25, 30-minute episode?
You know, I don't actually see it as that different. You know, I think people from the outside see it different. I see it as just a larger version of what we were already doing with our field pieces, you know. And I think Oliver, you know, to a degree does the same thing with his longer pieces that he does, that he's known for right now. They're all extensions from these sort of 5-minute, 6-minute field pieces that we used to do on The Daily Show, because they were very succinct, you know, the good ones anyway, were very succinct stories. They had characters, you know, that we basically, you know, quote unquote cast. You know, they would, what they would say, you know, you couldn't always predict, but for the most part, we would follow a script that we knew they were going to say it based on previous interviews. They never say it exactly how you want them to say it, but you would prompt them, and they would basically, then we would guide them along a script, unbeknownst to them, through the games that we wanted to play. Sometimes they went on them, sometimes they didn't. We had a conclusion to the story. So essentially, you know, what I'm doing now is just a longer format, except we're using actors instead of real people. Which is much easier, by the way.
For sure. The Detour starts the second season this coming Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on TBS, which has had an amazing run of new comedies last year. All of them are back this year. Search Party, People of Earth, Angie Tribeca, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. and we've got the person behind The Detour. That's the star, co-creator, co-executive producer, everything else, Jason Jones. He's with us here live this half hour from New York on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, also with you from the Big Apple. Delighted you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for making the time for us here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Jason or other guests ahead, you know what to do. Use this number, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We've got guests 1089 and 1092 already in the room. So make use of the room. We do hear you because what you say matters. And coming up later on this month on Tomorrow We Televise, you'll meet a former child star of Everybody Loves Chris, who is now headlining with Aubrey Wood and some other wonderful people a brand new Netflix movie called Burning Sands. Her name is Imani Hakim, and you will meet her. She is a star on the rise. You'll meet her a week from Friday. That is, next Monday, week from Monday. That's February 27th, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Imani Hakim from the new Netflix original film, Burning Sands. That's right here exclusively, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, a week from Monday, February 27th, last Monday of the month, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jason, what pleases you the most about how The Detour has turned out?
Sorry, one more time. The connection is pretty poor here.
What pleased you the most, as the co-creator with Samantha, what pleased you the most about how The Detour has worked out, the first season and now having the second season going?
I'm always amazed when I'll sit in a room with, either my wife or a bunch of buddies of mine, and we'll just throw out stupid things, stupid ideas, and then we'll write them down, and then all of a sudden the fun is never lost on me when you're just on set, and then all of a sudden 100, 150 people are working on bringing this stupid idea to life. Sometimes these big, big, grand ideas. We had this sort of beach assault scene, and we had something we just joked about, and there was boats with machine guns zipping back and forth while we're running away from them. I was like, wow, there's a lot of people here working on this stupid idea that we thought of. It's always great. So that always pleases me.
It really is something when you enroll people in a stupid idea, and then the stupid idea comes out so perfect or comes out so well
to
the audience.
It's kind of amazing, and it's to see people get on board your stupid idea and want to make your stupid idea even stupider is always great. They're like, what if we do this with the props guys and the wardrobe and the designers. You just go, wow, you're all really working hard on this dumb idea that we just laughed about with while we were probably drinking in the middle of the day in a writer's room. It's pretty great.
How much did you and Samantha reflect about, wow, here we are, we've gone from The Daily Show, we both have our own programs in primetime on TBS, and we're both making it. It's not like you're making it, she's not, she is, and you're not. You're both making it at the very same time.
I think we're too busy to step back and appreciate where we are, I think, Certainly, we're very happy and we're very excited to be where we are. But, between raising three kids and two television shows, there isn't a lot of time to pat ourselves on the back. But like I said, we're very fortunate to be where we are.
Mm-hmm. Have you developed a key to how you raise a television show, raise a show that pleases you and the audience, you as a creator, the audience as the people watching?
A key to how you do it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, is there not a key to how to do it? Yeah, more sort of like, is there like a, have you developed sort of a, here's a guide I follow to making a good television show? Then you're
right.
Like your guide.
I think, to me, writing is everything. Like you're just a pig is still a pig. With lipstick or a nice dress, it's still a pig. If it's really hard, I think it's really tough in this business with the amount of professionals we work on, is to screw up a great script. It takes some effort to screw up a good script, and I'm not discounting direction and production at all. But to me, everything begins with a great script, and an interesting story is key, and a I hate to use the word fresh, but I'm going to. But just a fresh story that doesn't feel derivative. You know, it can feel familiar, but when an audience, especially with a comedy, when an audience feels, oh, I've seen that. I don't know where I've seen it, but I've seen that. You're just going to lose them immediately. So unless you're surprising your audience, they're not going to come, and they're not going to come. They're definitely not going to come back.
Well, I have a hunch that a lot of people will be coming back Tuesday night to catch season two, and hopefully many, many more, Jason, in store. It looks like it's going to be a great season, and especially happy that you've become one of the latest new shows to happen here in New York.
Yes, yeah. It was, like I said, great time filming here. Pain in the ass to film here. and I'm not saying because of the workers, but because of the people who you're shooting around. They will never stop on the street for a... I feel so bad for PAs who have to try to stop New Yorkers from walking onto set.
Well, let's see what we can do with the mayor's office and maybe some other people too involved. I get what you're talking about. So something to work on, but let's see if we can maybe get that before season three goes. I have a hunch it is going to happen. The Detour season two begins this coming Tuesday, 10 p.m. East Pacific time on TBS. Check it out where TBS is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details online, here's where you go, www.tbs.com. It's www.tbs.com. We're supposed to go home. A full frontal with Commander B. I believe that is on Wednesday nights. Also during the 10 to 11 o'clock hour, yes, is a primetime show. Not a late night, primetime show. And again, that is also on TBS. For more details on that program as well, it's tbs.com. Jason Jones, co-creator, star, executive producer, et cetera, of The Detour, thank you again for making the time this Friday afternoon. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on season one. All the best with season two and certainly way, way beyond. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, man. Good to talk to you.
Same here. Have a super weekend. Take care. Jason Jones of The Detour joining us live here in New York. More tomorrow night televised coming your way, but first, some fine messages from the people at Audible.com. Are you a Lemony Snicket fan? A lot of people are, thanks to the Netflix series based on that wonderful set of books. And you can check them out, but you don't have to go to Netflix all the time. You can, maybe in the midst of your Netflix viewing, your binge viewing, you can do some binge audio and check out The Bad Beginnings. It's one of the Lemony Snicket of audiobooks available through Audible.com with a wonderful cast headlined by Tim Curry. And all you have to do is get that book free and, along with it, a 30-day trial to Audible.com, an Amazon company. And all you have to do is check out this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles to choose from, including The Lemony Snicket audiobooks, and much, much more, too, of any category you like, and then some. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and 1 month trial of service. And that 1 month trial will come up with great customer service because Audible is owned by Amazon. So give yourself a great sound experience or give it to someone you love. audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. The sooner you do, the sooner you realize that Audible.com is a major source of great sound entertainment, information, and yes, inspiration. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We update you on the question that we came out with on Monday. And so far, we have not come up with our second straight winner in a row and third one of the year. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep it in play through your President's Day holiday weekend. So here is the question. Take it down. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Lucio Ball FAQ, published by Applause Books with the FAQ series. Here's the question. On the TV series Scarecrow and Mrs. King, which starred Bruce Boxleitner and Kate Jackson for several seasons on CBS, what was Scarecrow's real name? What was Scarecrow's real name? Now, I have to tell you that after we posed the question on this past Monday, about 24 hours later, we heard from our winner last week, Doug Klein Jr. of Leesburg, Ohio. And guess what? He did come up with the answer, but because he had won before and it's so soon after he did, we decided let's keep it going, let's keep it in play. So, Doug, thanks for understanding, and I hope you enjoy, by the way, the DVD box set of Murphy Brown's first season, thanks to Warner Brothers. You should be getting it, if not by now, hopefully over the weekend, and we appreciate you, of course, being our winner last week. So, anyway, if you know the answer to this question, again, here's the question. On Scarecrow and Mrs. King, what was Scarecrow's real name? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and your full name and address. If you're on tap with the correct answer, you can win Lucio Ball FAQ, the latest in the popular FAQ book series from Flawed Books and Simon. We thank them for supplying the prize. Again, it's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow and throughout the President's Day weekend, both on my Facebook page and at my Twitter hashtag, UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So give it a play. And all the very best. And again, thank you to Applause Books and Cinema for providing this week's prize. When we come back, how is all this amazing TV technology impacting what you view and what you will soon view? We will go live to Emeryville, California, and talk to the head of Mobi TV, former Walt Disney executive Charlie Nunez. He will join us live after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the globe every month and growing. It's your home for Be Sickly, Kat Suzanne Turo and her guests for a wonderful time, meditating, and a whole lot more. Be Sickly, this Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. That's 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best be Charlie available 24/7 at YouTube.com. And if you have Apple TV, check out our program and others on the iTunes podcast app, also 24/7. Welcome back to Tomorrow Show Live, 90-minute edition. This Friday afternoon, Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Glad to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment for our guests ahead in the hour ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We welcome guests 1089 and 1092 into the room. We're going to switch now from the world of content to the world of technology that impacts content. And my next guest is a former senior executive at the Walt Disney Company. He is now the chief executive of Mobi TV. Joining us live from Emeryville, California, Charlie Nunez. Charlie, it's great to have you with us.
No, thank you, Simon. It's great to be on your show.
So of all the technology that's impacting TV today, I'm sort of giving what we posed at the beginning of the show, what do you think is the most impactful? Is it smart TV sets and devices? Is it virtual reality? Is it interactive programming? What do you think is sort of like driving people now toward how they view television?
Well, it's probably a little bit of all of the above. I mean, certainly the consumption of television has probably changed more dramatically in the last 24 months than it has in the last 24 years. So, you know, we're certainly seeing people get programming content from various places, getting it on various devices, et cetera. So, you know, what we really feel like is that what we're focused on is the actual delivery system. So at the end of the day, there's one simple thing that we believe, whether you're going through, you know, whatever way you're consuming your content, we believe very strongly, and I don't think it's any question about it, that video delivery will be IP in the future. I mean, that's how people are consuming content. Exactly. And then I cut the fuck off. So that's exactly how people are consuming content. That's where all the trend lines are going. That's why smart TVs and all the streaming devices are in the market. 4K TVs will even accelerate that adoption. And what it really does, it puts the unique pressure in the marketplace on how people will address that, how the various operators, the people who provide content will address that solution. Whether it would be through, you know, they can't stay put. The traditional set-top box will no longer work in the marketplace when you are going to IP delivery. They could get out of the video business. They could turn it over to some of the over-top providers, or they actually could become an IP delivery system. And that's really what we're focused on at Mobi TV.
I want to get more into that focus a little later on in our discussion, Charlie. But first, we know that because of the proliferation of smart TVs and devices like Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, etc., we know that's how people are watching Netflix, that's how they're watching Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and Full Screen and CBS All Access, as they might this weekend for the premiere of The Good Fight Sunday night, which will also be simulcast on CBS, first episode, and other devices. What we don't know yet is whether they will also use TV in other ways. We know Apple is trying. They've got 10,000 apps now, and among some of those apps are the ability to order pizza with Papa John's, the ability to order travel reservations maybe with TripAdvisor, the ability to play lots of video games, some of them very advanced, very skilled. We know they can order tickets through StubHub. I was watching a Bloomberg report that came out yesterday, on Bloomberg Television, where they had a corresponding, his name is Matt Gutman, talk about the fact that a lot of people think Apple TV right now is a failure because it's not involved in video as much as it is in apps. And that's sort of against what Tim Cook was saying almost 2 years ago when he said the future of TV is apps. What's your sense about, do you think the American public is ultimately going to use apps of this nature, whether it's gameplay or ordering products or merchandise, et cetera, anywhere near how they watch television shows?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're very quick to call things success and failures. But at the end of the day, the application business is certainly successful across the board in many formats. And I do believe one of the things that becomes important is that people are very used to applications. I mean, again, Netflix is an application, et cetera. So at the end of the day, I think that the idea that you will start seeing this seamless merging of applications and viewership will be very important. For a consumer now, if we're talking about television, if I'm sitting there at home watching my Comcast and I want to watch a show on Amazon Fire, I pick up the stick, put it inside the TV set, change remotes, click it off, move over, et cetera. That's not a great experience, and it's certainly not a seamless experience. So what an IPTV delivery system allows you to do is seamlessly move through those applications. And I think as that begins to occur, you're going to see a lot of adoption of that very quickly.
It's interesting, by the way, that Apple allows you now, speaking of Amazon, to order any Amazon merchandise you like from their catalog through Apple TV. This started a few months ago, and yet
right.
Amazon Fire does not have that capability. Does that surprise you that Apple is doing it and Amazon is not?
Well, I think it's probably more of a development cycle where Amazon ends with Amazon Fire. I mean, again, I have no insight into Amazon's roadmap, but I can't believe that Bezos does not have a big plans for in terms of integration of that. I mean, the whole idea of integrating shopping into Amazon Fire and making it seamless, gaining access to the household. I mean, in many ways, there's nothing more important than having access and controlling that big screen inside someone's living room. Even though a lot of the viewing is now being done on mobile and tablets, it's still a very powerful thing. So I'm sure that's just, I mean, again, I can't speak for them, but I'm sure that's just a roadmap issue they haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah. Before we move on to the new FCC chairman and how this person is going to impact the kind of things we watch, Ajit Pai, Apple, we know now that Apple is going to get into the TV content business. They're already working on two shows, and it was interesting that at a public event, sponsored by Recode, the website, a few days ago, that Eddie Q, who is sort of Apple TV's guru, was willing to talk about those two shows and basically downplay, Apple's going to be as big as Netflix kind of thing. And then I believe it was at the same event, Code Media, Jimmy Iovine, who is also a major with Apple Music, was basically saying, oh, we're going to do a lot more with television. I can't tell you on my list to see, but we're going to do a lot more with television than you think. And again, it goes back to this whole issue of like, what is the ultimate game plan that Apple wants to do? Do they want to be a major TV series player? Do they want to be a TV series? Are you getting mixed signals also about like what Apple, and for that matter also what Facebook wants to do? Because we hear that Facebook is going to do an app for Apple TV and Amazon and smart TV sets, where ultimately they want to create or they want to have a hand in creating original series content.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question, Simon, because, again, to me, the real interesting transition for companies like that is the, providing the platform and entering into the creative space. I mean, clearly, Netflix and Amazon and even Hulu coming up have probably been much more effective in that world than maybe a lot of people anticipated. So, it will be interesting to see. It would only be my uneducated guess in terms of what Apple would do, but I can't imagine Apple not trying to become a big player in the creative space. But again, I'm basing that on just my time in the business, not on any inside information from Apple. And Facebook, probably the same thing. I mean, the great thing about Facebook is the reach they have, their ability to deliver live content in such an effective way. So, it's all about maximizing monetization of what you're able to do. And, again, I would not be surprised if both of them double down. And I think that's going to be one of the more fascinating things we'll see over the next few years, are who are the winners and losers. Because I'm not sure we can safely say who those people are going to be right now with great confidence. I mean, it's probably about 100 times more up in there than it was when you and I could have sat on the phone 10 years ago and talked about how Blockbuster cards are in more people's wallets than any other card in the world, and where are they today?
We are speaking with Charlie Nooney. He is the head of Mobi TV, chief executive there. And he joins us live from Emeryville, California, former senior executive at Walt Disney. And he is joining us live from Emeryville, California this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, we won't be with you normally on Monday because of President's Day holiday weekend. We hope you have a great three-day holiday wherever you may be taking it. So join us on Tuesday. We'll be with you, and joining us will be from Netflix's series Chef's Table, which started its third season earlier today, the creator executive producer live with us, David Gelb. Then from CMT's new mini-series Sun Records, the executive producer, who also has his own production company, Think Factory Media, our friend Leslie Grice, who has been on this program before. It's all coming up next Tuesday, February 21st, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I know it's early in the run of I.J. Pye, the former FCC commissioner, now chairman of that commission, Federal Communications Commission. What do you expect of him, and how do you think he is going to impact what we watch down the road?
Well, I think it is early. I mean, certainly it's going to be very different than a lot of ways the way Wheeler was addressing the space. I mean, I don't anticipate many changes on net neutrality. I think at the end of the day, you know, I don't know what some of the other issues he will do that he will pursue. I think that some of Wheeler's initiatives around, you know, set-top boxes, et cetera, will be put on the shelf short-term. But in the day, I don't think that, and again, from my perspective, I don't think it's going to change much of the trajectory of where the space is going. I mean, when you really look at what's driving the changes in the marketplace, and a lot of the rules that Wheeler was putting in place anyway were designed for kind of the larger players and their ability to pay or not pay in this space. What was really driving it is consumer behavior. I mean, you can't be a cable company or a content provider and continue to lose thousands and thousands of subscribers a day. And as you try to establish that relationship with the consumer directly with your TV everywhere application was over the top, as you said earlier, as smart TVs and other streaming devices come out, it's all being driven by consumer demand and consumer behavioral change. So, you know, certainly the FCC will have some impact on the changes in the marketplace. There'll be emphasis put here. It may be a more deregulatory friendly environment. We may see some mergers take place that might not have taken place before. But I don't see that really changes the way people consume their product over what devices they consume their product.
Do you see Pye taking any initiatives that would help expand diversity in television, whether it is trying to encourage through crowdfunding, through venture capital investment, through other means to get more women and women of color, people of color involved with television, whether it is owning production companies, getting new series off the ground, getting apps off the ground that could be done on television, along with smartphones and tablets. Is there any sense as to how he would play a role, because he is a person of color himself, in terms of expanding diversity?
No, that's a great question. I mean, again, you know, like the entire marketplace, so, you know, we're probably underutilizing the talent pools that are out there and creating unfair barriers for people to compete in the marketplace. So, you know, I think crowdfunding is really a great way to start looking at ways to do creative things. And we're seeing, you know, again, we're a technical platform, and you know, we're not on the creative end of the equation. But, you know, what I'm really seeing is a lot of interesting things in the marketplace in terms of people, you know, finding unique ways to get funding, and certainly the VC community is reacting to some of those. So, you know, just from a pure standpoint of making sure that the industry is working from all cylinders, we should be maximizing, you know, a completely diverse base. And, you know, we certainly address it here at Mobi in terms of what we try to do in terms of our hiring practices. But at the end of the day, we really don't have, you know, despite my background at the Disney company, we really don't have access into the creative community. I mean, what we're really designing to do is make sure that our platform provides the cable operator, particularly the ones that are being left behind because of this move to IPTV transition, that they have a chance to play in this space on a level playing field. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is if I'm sitting in, you know, pick your town in middle America or anywhere in America, and I have built a cable business on my set-top box. And that set-top box has been sitting there for 4 or 5 years, and now I'm facing all these pressures around IP delivery. I've got to go forklift my entire infrastructure and rebuild my cable system. And that's expensive. And I'm having to do that just to keep up with the Netflix and the Hulus and the Apple and the Apples and the Amazons of the world, because I'm losing my subscribers to that. And in many ways, you know, if I'm a cable operator, I'm frustrated because I helped build this business, and now you're telling me I'm going to have to be a passive player. And really what we believe is that – I'm sorry, go ahead.
And to interrupt quickly, so how does your company, Mobi TV, and explain the way we all understand here, how does your platform handle that so that if you are somebody who wants to create an app, whether it's a video game, whether it is a Netflix-type service, whether it's an individual program, whether it is an open table or an Airbnb or a Zillow, a home advisor kind of service, how would your platform be used to get what you're doing across to viewers around the country?
No problem. And again, think of us as an OTT technology with an IPTV system. So if there is a cable operator, let's just pick a random city. We'll say there's a cable operator in Jackson, Mississippi. And what I have is a traditional set-top box business where I'm delivering video, and I feel the pressure of, you know, buying additional inventory and trying to keep up on IPT delivery. What we can deliver to them through an application base is a Xfinity Plus type experience, a full television experience with local national channels, catch-up TV, all the network DVR functionality, voice command, every great innovation that you can think of in the video space we can provide for that operator to sell under their brand. So, again, it's not a national OTT brand. We would be branding it that local cable operator's brand so they can compete in the space. Then, Simon, as you start looking at that richer app world, as you start looking at things like, you know, shopping applications and, you know, restaurant applications, those are much more easily integrated into an IPTV platform than they would be to the traditional set-top box platform, which they could not be integrated into. So really what we're designed to do is we're very focused on, and we've done this on the international markets, and we're moving here in the U.S. markets doing it now, is delivering to these operators, allowing them to upgrade their systems to get on the front of innovation without a big capital investment, without having to go back and redo their set-top boxes, without having to go back and, you know, forklift out the existing infrastructure, but really start competing in the space now, today, with a pure IPTV system. So when I call you from in Jackson, Mississippi, and tell you I want cable, your response to me was, do you have a Roku box? Do you have a smart TV? Do you have an Amazon Fire? Do you have a Apple TV? If the answer is yes, you download the application, and there's your cable television. If the answer is no, we would advise you to go to your local Best Buy or order online and get a Amazon Fire Stick and download the application. There's no box in your house. There's no box charges. You're good to go.
Does your platform, Charlie, work with voice systems like a Siri from Apple or an Alexa from Amazon? Because what we're hearing is that more and more an Apple TV has Siri functionality. More and more an Amazon Fire TV has Alexa functionality. And it may end up being, and if we are reading the tea leaves right, that, and Google has Echo, which could be part of Chromecast. We don't know yet if it is. So if voice commanding is becoming A, more functionality and more versatile functionality, isn't that something that that Mobi is going to have to address at some point?
That's something we have addressed, and you're spot on. And really one of the biggest reasons to do it, Simon, is you're going from the traditional 100-button remote to a remote that has 4 or 5 buttons on it. So voice command becomes extraordinarily important as part of the overall experience. I mean, certainly we use swipe technology and other things, so you're not completely dependent on voice, but we have all voice integration that Apple and Android have on their devices. We are actually demonstrating next week in New Orleans our Alexa integration that we are doing on our IPTV system at the WEC conference. So that is a very good point. I mean, I think that what we're seeing in the marketplace as you start going to this very much more straightforward, simplistic approach to television with a much more straightforward remote device, that, you know, me saying that I want channel 145 or I want this program or I want ESPN, that's the best way to do it.
How much does it cost the cable operator to use your platform or the satellite operator to use your platform? And you encourage them, whatever you do, don't pass the cost on to the customer, because after all, you want the customer, i.e. us viewers, to use your service.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, our business model, we have two types of approaches we do in the marketplace. Because we have a multi-tenant system, we can operate a complete managed service, and we can run multiple operators from a central location if you are really a very small operator and you do a service like the services of ours. We can, you know, give you the best feeds possible and offer a managed service. And that is a software license fee approach, like a typical software license fee. And then we can also do an in-network deployment. And again, the same thing. It is a software license type approach in the market. And that just means we're actually going into their head in and into their network and installing our software in there. So, you know, again, we actually are designed to save money for the operator, to make it easier for them to compete competitively in the pricing marketplace. If they want to offer skinny bundles, if they want to do full services, if they want to do some combination of local and national, whatever configuration they want to put in the marketplace, being a software service, we're completely configurable. We're also, you know, completely Title VI compliant. You know, we are fully protected by all the DRMs, et cetera. I mean, we spent a lot of years building this platform. What was kind of unique about our company is the fact that we cut our teeth in the mobile space, and we were the leaders in mobile video technology for so long. We really learned a lot about how to deliver over IP. I mean, you know, we did it as just what we had to do, including how to protect, you know, have DRM protections for the content providers on mobile devices, and including having to be able to switch from one network condition to the other seamlessly. So, you know, it was a great training ground for this new IPTV development. And a lot of the work we did was with systems in India and Germany and Japan as we waited for the rules here in the U.S. to kind of catch up to the IPTV network landscape.
Well, welcome guest 1122 into our chat room. We have a question or comment for our guest, Mobi TV Chief Executive and former Walt Disney Senior Executive Charlie Nooney. Put it in the room. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And for everyone else, if you want to use the phone rather than the room, give us that call, 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. Your catch us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And Charlie's joining us live from Emeryville, California. This is Tomorrow We Televise, the program all about the tube. Simon Apple down with you live from New York. Next Friday on our program, one of our guests from NBC's new series, Taken, based on the hit movies, executive producer and writer Alexandra Carey. And coming up a week from Monday, February 27th, among our guests, we'll have the former child star of Everybody Loves Chris on UPN. Now she is the co-star, with Alfred Wood and others, of a brand-new Netflix film, a very important one called Burning Sands. Her name is Imani Hakim. We will have her live right here with us. That is a week from Monday, February 27th, the last episode of the month, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Let's turn for a moment to virtual and augmented reality. Right now, for the most part, what everyone talks about is headsets, headgear, Oculus, Gear VR, Next VR, or devices like a Google Cardboard. But we know that you can deliver virtual reality, and I would get also augmented reality through a television set. But it seems that still the phone is on, the headgear, the headgear, the headgear, and it's not enough on the television set, TV set, TV set, although you have Apple with Little Star, an app based here in New York that has been doing it now for over a year, putting VR on the TV set, and you can use your Apple remote control or Siri to command which way the picture goes. And we know the Google Chromecast, based on a appearance a Google executive had at a summit here in New York last fall, they're working on Chromecast allowing VR on the TV set. What do you think of this whole VR, AR marketplace? Do you see ultimately the TV set will be as important to catch VR as it is, you know, putting on some sort of headgear?
Yeah, that's, you know, again, I think a lot of it is the issue of a personal versus shared experience. And the other fact is that, you know, hardware changes tend to happen slower than software changes. But, you know, I can tell you, Simon, there's probably not an RFP or a request we get from a operator where VR is not something that they want for us to identify on the roadmap, when we'll deliver it, et cetera. You know, we play around with, at this point, we play around with all the various headsets in the marketplace. We, you know, look at the hardware that's available. And, you know, clearly you see there's something there. I mean, in some ways, you know, I liken it, and this is probably a very poor analogy, where I liken it to the 3D experience inside the theaters. That, you know, that technology was available for quite some time, and it just really began to take off when the, you know, the economics paid out, the business model makes sense, and the theaters were retrofitted in order to do it. So I think you're going to see similar things in in-home viewing. I think for the foreseeable future, you'll see a lot of it be headset wear where people can actually bring it to their homes. But I think over time, I think it'll be interesting to see how the in-home set will evolve to make it more of a experience that is more of a shared experience for people.
Yeah. What do you think about interactive services? We mentioned some of that, of course, earlier, like, for example, ordering products, maybe home education, things like that. We know there are some people out there that are now starting to look at interactive programming. And also, there's a company called TouchJet Wave, which has a box that you attach to somewhere on your television set, which allows you to turn your TV set into a touchscreen, where you can, if you want, go right up to the set and put a smartphone or tablet app on the set and manipulate it any way you want. Or you can do it, you can download it through your smartphone or tablet and use a smartphone or tablet to manipulate what comes up on the screen. What's your thoughts about touchscreen television or touchscreen possibilities and how Mobi might play a role in that?
Well, we may play a significant role in that. If you think about it, I mean, we built this company, the foundation, on the first place where touchscreens existed, and that was on mobile devices. I mean, Mobi was the first company to deliver live video on an iPhone. Back with March Madness, a long time ago. I can't remember the exact date. So, you know, the issue of touchscreens and swipe technology and touchscreen technology is something we're extremely familiar with. And, you know, I actually believe a little bit opposite of what you're talking about is that the mobile phone is the device that will control all the video experiences, whether that is you're using it as a remote or you're using it as a touchscreen remote or you're using it to create some kind of interactivity with your viewing experience. So, you know, I'm not as big a believer on some of the things that attach to the set, although I certainly am, you know, they could certainly be the breakthrough, next breakthrough thing. What I really believe in is the mobile phone. I mean, I really believe that the mobile phone is the computing power the mobile phone has can actually open up massive doors we haven't seen before. And, you know, we're just scratching the surface with things like touchscreens and voice and those things. So, you know, absolutely, I believe all these things are coming. But like I said, from our single perspective, we believe a lot of those will be used by the handset you're holding in your hand.
Well, we've given Charlie a lot of food for thought to our listeners, and we're going to leave it right there and see what does pop up through your company and through others as well. If you want more details about Charlie Nooney's company, Mobi TV, here's where you go online. It's www.mobitv.com. It's www.mobitv.com. Charlie Nooney, the chief executive of Mobi TV, former senior executive with the Walt Disney Company. Thanks again for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on. We would love to have you back, and all the best with Mobi and what you're up to in terms of impacting our TV experience for the greater.
Great, Simon. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
You're welcome. A wonderful pleasure. Have a great weekend. Take care.
You too.
Charlie Nooney, the head of Mobi TV, former senior executive with Walt Disney, joining us live from Emeryville, California. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We are the program all about the tube. And right now it's time for Up as an update, where we catch up on some of the guests and topics we've had in this program. Back on Monday, we introduced you to a stand-up comedian named Bob Greenberg, who sometimes dabbles in the world of TV acting. Well, we talked on the program about his work on shows like Vinyl, Law and Order, other shows where he often plays the bad guy. Well, after our program, a few hours after we wrapped up our episode, guess what? Got a call from the producers of The Blacklist on NBC, which produces here in New York. And he went for an audition. As what? A bad guy. Now, we don't know how he did. We'll have to wait a little bit. But if he makes out, or if he doesn't, I'm sure he will keep us posted. It was a pleasure to have Bob on the show. If you want to catch up on that interview, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also go to iTunes.com or check out Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. Our program and other Blog Talk Radio programs available 24/7 in that way. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Remember, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our program today so far, and what's your thoughts about where TV is at, where it's going? We always like to know, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. I do respond to emails within 24 hours. You can also check me out on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, where I often tweet about the world of TV with updated developments, other things too, and that's at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. When we come back, we go live across the Atlantic to England, and we catch up with the crazy executive producers of one of the best new shows of 2015. It's back on AMC Monday nights, Humans. Jonathan Brackney and Sam Vincent will be my guests after we pause near the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best radio in the universe. It's www.blogtalkradio.com for the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for fast, great breakfast. Check out the NDA while you're eating, whatever the meal is, breakfast or whatever you like. Check it out every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7, again, at YouTube.com or Apple TV's iTunes podcast app, as well as iTunes. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Tell Lies on this Friday afternoon expanded 90-minute edition. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. We are so happy you did. 41 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Delighted you're with us. It's very bright and fun. Not much of a breeze, I'm happy to say. And incidentally, the outlook for the weekend here in New York, near 60 degrees on Saturday, over 60 on Sunday. So we like that as we get into a holiday President's Day weekend. Delighted to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or you can use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Right now in the room we have 1126 and 1122 in the room. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. While the phone is on the air, connect others. Find the Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. Nearly 2 years ago, AMC premiered a very unusual series about an Earth where synths can rule. We're talking about synthetic beings and how they deal with the rest of us human beings, who sometimes not humans. The program is humans. It got great critical acclaim. I was one of the year's best new series, and I'm happy to say that Monday night it returned for its second season. Joining us live, actually rejoining us, because they were with us during the first season, rejoining us live from England, an interview exclusive, the creators and executive producers, Jonathan Brackney and Sam Vincent. Jonathan, Sam, it's wonderful to have you back.
Thanks very much, Simon. It's great to be back on the show.
Yeah, very pleased to be here.
Absolutely, Jonathan, Sam, and Jonathan, I'll start with you. What's been the reaction so far to season two?
It's been great. I mean, the first episode went out in the US last Monday, and we've got some great notices. Yeah, we're really thrilled with how it's been reviewed and how the audience has received the show. So yeah, we couldn't be happier.
Sam, when we had you on the show 2 years ago, you made it very clear you did not want this to be a War of the World kind of program where all the synthetic beings are the same. You wanted what we call multi-stream or multi-story every program, every episode, where we see a different side or a different facet of how these synthetic beings exist. First of all, what was the audience reaction to that storytelling style, and have you kept it going in season two?
We have absolutely kept it going. The audience reaction was really great. I mean, over here in the UK, it was one of the broadcasters. It was the broadcaster's biggest ever drama launch. So season one was a huge ratings hit and critically acclaimed as well. So we felt fairly vindicated in doing that. I mean, we always were completely committed towards doing a much more complex and sort of 360-degree picture of this idea, rather than the usual one, kind of rather binary, one side is good and the other side is bad thing. We wanted to tell every different possible side of this story. And you can do that in TV. You know, you have the time and the space to do that. And it will, you know, for as long as humans continues, well, I think we will continue to find every different facet of this world as long as we can, yeah.
So, John, in the second season, what are the new facets of these, what you call Siths? What new facets of their existence, what they deal with, how they deal with us? What did you decide to explore this season?
Well, one of the most exciting things that's new that we're exploring in this season is we're addressing the concept of synths gradually becoming conscious. Obviously, in season one, we had the band of already conscious synths on the run and trying to live their lives. But in this season, we get to witness a formerly non-sentient being gradually becoming conscious and getting to grips with how to be a sentient being in this world. So that was really exciting for us.
What hit me in season one Sam, was really two stories. One was the story of the family that had the synth come to the present. The family, the parents, I hope, was well played by Catherine Parkinson and Tom Goodman Hill, and the synth herself, Nia, played by Gemma Chan. They're back, all three, but now Gemma is apart from that family. She's on the run. The family is trying to repair its relationship. Explain how all three of the characters develop in the second season.
Well, I think one of the things we wanted to do for the second season was we knew that the first season had been very much about two families, the very ordinary family, the ordinary human family, who you spoke about there, and then the completely unusual synth family, the family of conscious synths and how they interacted. And we wanted to kind of take a slightly different focus this time and make it more about pair relationships, make it more about love and romantic relationships and one-on-one friendships. And to sort of shuffle the whole pack, if you like, and see what interesting things we could find by putting people in new pairs. So sort of almost every one of the conscious synth characters has a new partner or a love interest or a companion in the second season. And that's something we really wanted to do, just to shine a different light on those characters and also develop them in a different way. You know, like you say, how do we want to develop them? We want to kind of throw them into different situations and relationships all the time. And that's the way that seems to be to us to be the best way to explore your characters and find out new things about them.
And Sam, the other relationship that I think touched a lot of people here in the United States was William Hurt's performance as someone who has a synth, who he sees as a son and treats him that way. And the son is, of course, hunted by the authority. I'm curious what the reaction, how you both, dealt with the reaction to that episode. So from what the response I saw here in the United States was, this really was something that hit home. And it hit home for a lot of reasons, because in part because William Hurt's character deals with Alzheimer's. And he's like losing, you know, at some point he is going to lose, you know, his being while he is trying to, you know, raise this synth as a son.
I think that was one of the most important aspects of the show for us in showing the sort of the positive sides of a world in which these machines might exist. The fact that someone could create a sort of a genuine relationship with one of these things, something that cared for it and served as a sort of a memory repository, really, for the memories that the character could no longer retain themselves. And one of the things that was really, really interesting us in terms of audience reaction was that Odie became one of the sort of fans' favorite characters. And, you know, he's not even one of the conscious synths. We were sort of considering, when we were developing the show, whether an audience would relate to the conscious synths, let alone the unconscious ones. We were convinced that they'd, be interested in the human family. But it turns out that the audience absolutely, loved all the synths. But Odie being unconscious was really a fascinating thing for us.
We're speaking with the creators and executive producers of Humans, the critically acclaimed series, now in its second season, Monday nights at 10 on AMC. That's Jonathan Beckley and Sam Vincent. The both was live from England this half hour, right here exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from across the other side of the Atlantic, namely New York, 41 degrees at the top of the hour. Glad to have you with us this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Jonathan or Sam, don't be shy. Get the ring going. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Coming up a week from Monday on the program, we'll meet a former child star of Everybody Hates Chris on UPN. Now she is involved alongside Alfre Woodard, one of my favorite actresses, by the way, and some other wonderful people, in a new Netflix original film called Burning Sands. You will meet Imani Hakim. That is next Friday, or I should say, week from Monday, February 27th, the last episode of the month, at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. It looks like, Jonathan, that one of the things you and Sam want to explore more in this second season is the whole idea of consciousness. When do you have it? When do you not have it? But more importantly, and I'll get to where I'm going in a second, can it be changed? Can it be altered? is it a good thing to alter or change someone's consciousness, human being or artificial being, or is it, you know, is it awful? Is it evil?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of the whole concept of consciousness was one we wanted to sort of push a bit further in this series, and we were lucky enough to talk to some experts in the field who obviously, you know, they told us things like, you know, obviously there are levels of consciousness. There are different types of consciousness. There's not just one sort of consciousness. You know, my dog might be conscious, but it doesn't experience the world in the same way that I do. But by the same token, you know, that doesn't mean it has any less value or any less right to exist. You know, we have laws in place that protect animals as much as they protect humans. And so moving on from that, you know, one of the big themes of the second series is, you know, do synths have or should they be given any sort of rights in this world? And a part of that was, you know, really exploring, you know, how we react to something else that has a consciousness different to ours.
Now, the reason I sort of bring this up, and while you're bringing it up, is because one of your key new characters in this second season is played by Carrie Ann Moss, the wonderful co-star of The Matrix, which ironically is all about the idea of what's real, what's unreal, in part through artificial intelligence. Now, she plays a doctor, very famous person in the area of AI, by the name of Dr. Athena Morrow, and what she's out to do is try to create a whole new kind, a whole new environment of consciousness among the synths, among the machines, among the artificial beings. First of all, Sam, did both of you find ironic that here she is from The Matrix in your show? And I'm curious whether you used, you know, what she did in The Matrix in any part in terms of writing about her character.
I don't think she particularly drew on her Matrix experience or Matrix character for that, but undoubtedly, you know, there is a little bit of overlap in terms of perceiving what is real, and she's a person who we know from the science fiction space. But I think she, you know, she came to it with a blank slate. She was very interested to kind of chat to us about our take on it and what it was, and we were just delighted to have her, really. And then I think that the thing that we realized when the rushes started coming, when the dailies started coming in, we thought, oh dear, we've got Carrie Ann Moss, and in every single scene, she's just talking to a computer monitor that isn't even switched on. And we thought, oh, we've not really helped ourselves out here very much. But the thing is that she brought so much to it, and she kind of did so much, put so much thought into it and so much preparation that she was able to make those scenes actually work and actually get a lot of emotion out of essentially what was just her talking to a computer screen in a room. But by the time it was finished, it had real emotional power. So she brought that to it. But no, I mean, I think you'd have to ask her, really, but I don't think she particularly brought too much from The Matrix. But yes, watching it, I did keep thinking, oh, I really need to go back and watch The Matrix again, actually.
Sam, Jonathan, another one of the characters who happens to be a Sam, is played by a person named Sam Fidelio from Nashville fame, we also saw him in an episode of the Showtime series, is a cafe owner by the name of Ed. And in the press release that AMC came out with for your series this year, he's trying to breathe life into his family business. Sounds like his character is literally trying to do that.
That's right. Yeah, he's running a cafe. I mean, it's the family cafe, but unfortunately, his mother's too unwell to take the reins. So he's having to desperately try and keep it afloat. But it's a struggle. You know, it's in an area of sort of economic decline, and he's not getting more customers. Nevertheless, he still has Mia, the synth, helping him out in the cafe, and it's through that experience and that bond together that they develop a very special relationship.
Yeah. How do you two work as a team, Sam? Do you write all the episodes? At any time, do you bring other people in to assist you in writing? Or is it a situation where you feel the most comfortable by splitting up the writing yourself between the two of you?
Well, how do we work together? Inefficiently and haphazardly most of the time is the honest truth. No, we do have other writers. We have kind of figured out a system of our own that is kind of half the British system, half the American writers' room system. We write quite a high volume of scripts ourselves. We wrote 6 in the first year. We wrote 5 in the second year. We had a couple of writers each time working with us, but we don't kind of run a room across weeks and weeks and weeks and kind of beat every story thing out in the room. We let the writers kind of take a bit more individual responsibility. So we'll have story conferences and everybody pitches into the story, but then when it comes time for the writers to write their script, they go away and do that rather than kind of going through every step of it with me and John. And that seems to be a fairly good system, so you really get the most out of all of the creative contributors, but you also allow people to kind of retain a bit more individuality over their bit of work. And as for me and John, we'll always work on the same script. We don't ever work on separate scripts. Even when there's a lot of time pressure, we feel it's better to keep our joint mind in that one script. Obviously, we work on different parts of it. He'll start part one, I'll start part two, but we talk constantly about it, and we sort of keep our hive mind in that one space before we move on together. And so far, that seems to have worked fairly well.
Yeah. Sam, when you actually put the episodes on film, do you have one director for the entire series, or do you like to switch it up where you have different directors for different episodes? Or one director maybe do 2 or 3 and another do the rest?
So we divide our episodes up into what we call blocks, and each block is 2 episodes, and each director, and we have a different director for each block. So over 8 episodes, that's 4 directors, each one doing a block of 2. So in that system, you know, the most important director is probably the first one who, especially when in the first series, is the one who kind of kicks it off and makes a lot of decisions about casting with you and is involved in launching it, really. And then the other directors have that kind of really tricky job of trying to sort of match the house style while also bringing their individuality to it. So it's always like other writers working with you, it's always a kind of tricky process of trying to find that balance between this director has a very individual style and yet they've got to adhere to the story and adhere to the sort of basic stylistic principles that another director has put in place, you know, some time before. But, you know, the directors that we worked with on Series 2 were fantastic, all of them, you know, all in slightly different ways. But fortunately, we managed to assign each of our 4 directors to the right block. And they had the right kind of material and the right kind of challenges for each of their particular skill sets, and we're just delighted with the work that they did on Series 2.
Jonathan Brackley and Sam Vincent are the creators and executive producers of one of the most thought-provoking series you can find on television. You can find it on AMC. It's Humans, Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, now in its second season. And Jonathan and Sam are joining us live in an interview exclusive from England, where they are based right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, who is you live from New York on this Friday afternoon of February 2017. Delighted to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Jonathan and or Sam, give us a call and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. One of NBC's upcoming new shows is Taken, based on the famous movie series. And coming up next Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, one of my guests will be the key executive producer and writer on that series, Alexander Carey. That's Alexander Carey from Taken, premiering later this month on NBC. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Sam, another character that you introduced this year is actually an offshoot called a Cincy. And she is played by Letitia Wright, wonderful actress who's done a lot of interesting work, including Black Panther. And what's interesting about her character, known as Rennie, is that she's not only a Cincy, she's also a bullied Cincy. So, 2 questions for you. 1, what is a Cincy? How is it separate from a Cinth? And secondly, why did you decide to tackle, and I guess you tackle both bullying and cyberbullying to this character?
Well, so she is a Cynthy, which is a human, mainly teenage, but not exclusively subculture, that has grown up around Cynths and now seek to emulate them in some way. So it kind of has echoes of various kind of teen subcultures that have very particular ways of dressing and acting and iconography and looks. You know, you could compare them to something a little bit like the sort of goth movement, that kind of thing. And it's just one of those things that we always sit down before the start of a season and think, well, what else would be happening in this world? What else would be plausibly happening in this world? And when we hit upon this idea of synthes, which they do something like in the original Swedish series, I should say, as well, and give credit there. And we knew that that was something to that we really wanted to explore. And like most subcultures where people are, you know, dressing in a very particular way and acting in a certain particular way and showing their loyalty to a certain subculture, you know, the conventional parts of conventional society are going to mock them or shun them or bully them. So that was just seemed to be us to be a very kind of plausible extrapolation of this idea. And we also thought, you know what, it would be, there would be lots of people who the idea of being a synth or acting like a synth would be very, very appealing, because synths are perfectly calm, they're never angry, they're never stressed, they're never nervous, they're never frightened, they're completely serene and graceful and untroubled. So possibly acting like a synth would give you a little bit of the peace by sort of mimicking it outwardly. You may start to feel it inside. So we thought it was just one of those very, very plausible things. And then fortunately we were able to find such a wonderfully sort of emotionally vulnerable and raw actress as Letitia Wright to kind of completely mine it for human emotion. And I think you'll be really... really pleased with where that story goes. It's she just does such an amazing thing with it as we get towards the end of the series.
Sam, is this character bullied because in the eyes of others she's pretending to be something she's not, or is it for some other reason?
Well, I think that's part of it, but it's also just she's different, you know, such as, you know, anybody at high school who, you know, wanted to grow their hair really long or, you know, wear very unusual clothes or show any kind of adherence to any kind of particular subculture, whether it be something to do with music or in the music you liked. If you dress in a very outlandish way and act in a very outlandish way, the bullies are going to notice you. So really it was about being different and being, and of course she's mocked because she's made the, you know, highly unusual choice to sort of act like she's a synth. But we didn't think that the sort of bullying aspect was anything really different from any teen who makes a very bold choice to live their life in a certain unusual way.
And then before we go on, I do want to credit the four directors on the series this year. They're Lewis Arnold, Carl Tibbetts, Francesca Giorgini, and Mark Brazel, who, as you mentioned earlier, do two episodes each of this eight-episode season. The credits, by the way, range from Black Mirror, which if you haven't seen it on Netflix or anywhere else, is one of the most extraordinary series to come along in years, as well as Broadchurch. Mario did Broadchurch, which was a wonderful BBC series that also was adapted for American television on Fox a season or two ago. Jonathan, Sam, if you get a season three from AMC, what would you like to explore? How do you want to take this series in terms of themes?
That's a very interesting question because obviously we don't want to give away too many spoilers about what's going to happen in this series. But I think it's safe to say by the end of the series, the world will have changed. So if we're lucky enough to get a third season, we'll be going into a different sphere, and it's difficult to say exactly what we'll explore in there without giving away too much, but yes, it'll certainly be a very different show.
Yeah. For either of you, one more question about one of the other characters played by Sophie Cassidy. She plays a woman named Hester, who is a synth, but you describe her, at least AMC does, as quite unique. In what way?
Sorry, which character? I'm slightly lost you there. So, played by Sonia Cassidy, did you say?
Yes.
Sonia Cassidy plays Hester, who, you know, I'm going to assume there's no spoilers for for episode one of series two, who we see wake up and gain consciousness we're with her as she does spontaneously in the midst of doing her synth job, which is working at a chemical plant. And we wanted to do there, we were so interested in what it would be like to suddenly, spontaneously, all of a sudden, become fully sentient and fully aware and fully conscious, having lived, years as a unthinking, unfeeling, completely unconscious automaton. You suddenly wake up, you suddenly are born, as it were. And we just thought that was such a fascinating thing, because it wouldn't be like being born, because obviously your mental faculties are fully formed, you have the power of speech, you also have all of these memories that you can only now attribute emotion and feeling and thought to. So we just wanted to kind of go be at that amazing birth of a consciousness, and then follow that through, because while she's sophisticated and can speak and can think and all of those things, she's also only just begun to feel. So really her character is being formed in those very, very formative, important, seminal early moments of her life. And the traumatic, and if her experiences are traumatic, what effect is that going to have on her? Is she going to very quickly arrive at a warped view of the world? And is she going, are the characters around her going to be able to help her come to terms with things? Or is she going to go down an unusual and possibly dark path? You know, that's the kind of story that we want to tell with her. And I'll say for Sonia that she just takes it on. She builds the journey to a really incredible place by the final episode of this series.
If you wrote down the first season of Humans, I hope you catch up with season two. It is as thought-provoking, engaging, entertaining, and stimulating a program as you will see anywhere on television. You can see the second season of Humans next Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on AMC. Check your locals where AMC is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the series and all the other original programming that network has, here's where you go online, www.amc.com. It's www.amc.com. And if you get a chance to see the first season of Humans somewhere, either on AMC or elsewhere, make it your business to do so. I think you'll find it really, really wonderful. The performances by Captain Parkinson, Gemma Chan, Tom Goodman Hill, everyone down the line, including what I thought should have been an Emmy-nominated performance by William Hurt last year, because it was qualified for 2016, not last, because of the way Humans was scheduled in 2015. Really marvelous performance. So do check it out. Season 1, and again, Season 2, Monday night, 10 p.m. on AMC. Jonathan Brackley, Sam Vincent, thank you again for coming on. Congratulations on Season 2. Hopefully many, many more to come. And a pleasure to have you with us. And all our best to the cast and crew where you are in England.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us on.
True pleasure to be on.
It is a pleasure. Let's do it again. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jonathan Brackley and Sam Vincent, the creators and executive producers of Humans on AMC, joining us live from England. Tuesday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the creator executive producer of Netflix's hit series Chef's Table, David Gelb, and from Sun Records, the new CMC miniseries coming up later this month, the head of Think Factory Media and executive producer on Sun, Leslie Grease. It's all coming up Tuesday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode or want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, check out the podcast on iTunes.com, and we'd love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can find me on Facebook also, and follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. However you're involved, we hope you get involved. Why? Because what you say matters. The views presented on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great President's Day weekend. We're back on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and bring out there this holiday weekend. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.